We're doing our class on the Jewish home, and I want to begin with two stories. There was once a sweet, kind, old gentleman who was well-liked and admired by all of his friends and neighbors. They knew that he liked to help and was always happy to give a helping hand. He was a smiley and friendly and warm person. He always spoke gently and sweetly and always had a kind word to say. One morning, as the sun shone brightly and the sky hummed with birds singing their song, the man made his merry way down a smoothly paved path. Think for a minute how you feel. Now let's continue the story. There was once an angry, cruel woman. She was vicious and mean. Whoever knew her was shocked at how nasty and spiteful she was. Her horrible and sadistic manner got her the title the town witch. A terrible and ghastly thing happened one day. It was a dismal, dark, and dreary day. The clouds were gray and everything stunk. There was a mist that made it hot and humid and sticky. Brute force was required to simply walk down the block. On this day, there was an outbreak of Shigella in town, and the doctor's office was crowded with screaming, stinky babies, vomiting all over. How do you feel now? What I did with these two stories was I tried to make every second or third word in each story, in the first story, a positive word, and the second story, a negative word. I don't remember which university it was. They chose to do an experiment. They called in students, and they gave them a questionnaire to fill. They'd give them a list, 100 questions. In each row, they had 4 possibilities of an answer. The first 100 students, every question had 4 possibilities, each was a nasty word. That group of students, after they finished filling out the test, was told to give it in a certain office down the hall. When they came down the hall, the girl who was supposed to collect the papers was busy with someone else, dealing with someone else, and they had to wait in line while someone was asking annoying questions. Out of those 100 people who filled out that questionnaire, a huge percentage got annoyed at the person standing in front of them online within a very short amount of time. Their moods had automatically turned sour, simply because they were dealing with negative words. They took another group of 100 students, gave them a similar questionnaire, but the 4 choices they had to choose from on all 100 questions were all positive words. Of that group, a minuscule amount got annoyed. Most of them could stand and wait and wait and wait while the guy in front of them was asking all these annoying, stupid questions in line. The experiment was to see how the words we see and say affect us. You want to know where you are holding in life? Notice which words you're using. The words we use are reflective of where we are. But they are not only reflective of where we are, they can also define for us where we are. We said we'd give an experiment each day, each Binyan HaBayit class. So I challenge you to try every day this week, till the next class, to try and use positive words. Try. Take a few positive words and say them. And notice I purposely described the sun and the sky and the sticky or the pleasant, because every person has different senses that affect him. Meaning some people, the second I described a sweet and kind old gentleman, already fell into a good mood. Other people were only there when I described his smiley and friendly and gently and sweetly. And other people only when we described the sun shone brightly and the sky hummed with birds singing their songs. I tried to touch on the different senses that we have. Every one of us has different things that make a stick. So different people notice different senses. So when I described the angry, cruel woman, I also tried to touch on the senses. The clouds were gray, everything stunk, mist, hot, humid, dreary, sticky, vomiting, stinky. You guys noticed the different verbs affect different people. But in general, if we become accustomed to using positive terms, we will be more positive people. One of the mistakes that people often make before getting married is that they look for love before marriage. And true love can only develop after marriage. The love that can develop before marriage is more likely the love a person has for himself and what he thinks this person will give him. Love begins when I can see the other person, see the positive in the other person. That's what we might call chen in Hebrew. And people enter marriage thinking of the love song that they heard on the radio. She makes my heart beat. I get all excited. I don't know all these different terms that guys quote me and they say they do feel it or they don't feel it, and that's why they think they should get married or shouldn't get married. That's not what marriage is about. We have to first see the other person. We have to see beyond ourselves. See the good that's in the other person. See the kindness. See the things we could learn. See the things where we complete one another. And in order to do that, we have to have a good eye, an ayin tova. There's a rabbi that said recently, he said, the reason so many people can't get married today is because people simply have a bad eye. They see the faults of one another and they don't see the strengths of one another. I don't have the experience or the knowledge to make such a statement, but I do think that one of the keys to being happy in life, not only in marriage, is the capacity to see the good in the world. There's a rabbi here in yeshiva. Because some of you might one day find out who he is, I can't tell you how many tzaras are in his life. I can't tell you how many terrible things have happened and are happening in his life. I can only tell you that if you described your worst nightmare, I don't think you could imagine what's happening to this person. And if you look around the Bet Midrash, I'm willing to bet you would never know that this is what this man is undergoing. He has probably the biggest smile in the yeshiva. He teaches here, sits in a place you probably never noticed he exists. Very modest, humble person. If I had to describe one tzaddik in our time, I would choose him. And I could tell you the amount of tsaros, the amount of terrible things that are going on in his life. I don't even want to enumerate them, because then maybe one day you'll figure out who it is, and I don't think he wants people to know. But he's amazing. And you'll see him, you'd see the biggest smile, the person who is the most positive person you've ever seen. I'll tell you a story about his first wife. He lost his wife a few years ago. There are a few rabbis like that in the yeshiva. And she had suffered from cancer for quite a number of years. And they battled it and it came back, and they battled it and it came back, and it was at a point where they didn't have any cure. So she was in the hospital and she couldn't walk. And there was, what do they call him in English? In Hebrew, they call him like a medicinal clown. Therapeutic clown, what do they call it in English? There's this clown that his job is to come and give therapy, actually. Laugh therapy, or I don't know what they call it. To make the patients happy. So the clown came to her. And she's in the hospital, and she knows she has quite a number of children that the doctors say she's not going to see in a year. She's not going to be around to bring up her daughter that's still in diapers. And she and her husband listen to this clown. And when the clown finishes his act, she says, "That was amazing. Let's try to work it a little different together." And she gets up and she starts doing the act with him and tells him, "You know, if you did this a little bit this way and did that a little bit that way, I think it would be a little funnier." And then she says, you know what? I think I could do this well too. Why don't I join you on the act when you come to the hospital? So she'd go with the clown, and then she reached a point, she had cancer in her leg, where she couldn't walk. So they got her, you know, those skateboards with a handle? So she put her bad leg on the skateboard, and with her good leg, she'd pedal down the hallway with the clown. And this is like their act. You know, you see a grown woman, she's a mother of quite a number of kids already, riding on this, in Hebrew it's called a krokinet. I don't know what it's called in English. The scooter. She's riding on her scooter with the clown, and they'd come into the rooms and they'd place this act. Now the doctors have told her that she has less than half a year left to live, but she has to be in the hospital because a certain treatment they think will prolong her life or at least reduce the pain. So she's riding around with this clown, putting on the show, smiling and laughing. And at one point, one of the patients looks at her and says to her and the clown, you know, it's easy for you guys to smile. You're both alive and healthy, and you're going to be around in a year from now. So she looks at the clown, and the clown looks at her, and they look at the patient, and they smile, and they say, yeah, but we still try to understand. Our job is to try to understand. If people look at life positively, if people use positive words, if people have an ayin tova, that's what Shlomo HaMelech says, Vatishak liyom acharon. She laughed till her last day. I had the merit to go with them to one of the experts in her type of cancer in Tel Aviv. So we're traveling to Tel Aviv and I get road sickness. I ask them to pull over to the side. I vomit a few times. I get back in the car. We continue traveling. We finally get to the doctor and my stomach is shot. And when we get out of the doctor's office, she asks her husband, is there a way we could go by the ocean? And I'm thinking, oh boy, how am I going to stomach this all the way to the ocean? They look at me and they say, okay, we'll forgo the ocean this time, as though they're going to have another time. I said, what's special about the ocean? They both looked at me like I fell from the moon. She says, what do you mean? There's a blessing you make when you see the ocean. I'm thinking they want to see the view on the ocean. She wants to smell the salt, to walk on the sand. She's thinking, I could get one more blessing in my life. People in every situation have a choice to make. Which words they will use to describe the situation. How they're going to view the situation. We often say you have a choice of viewing it as half full or half empty, right? It's not only a question of how we view it, it's also a question of which words we use. The words we use fashion our mood, and they really fashion our outlook on life. In order for marriage to attain the beauty that it can, we have to be positive in our outlook. There was once a couple that had tremendous hardships. They came to a rabbi and they said, we've separated and we've decided we're giving it one more chance. So the rabbi said to them, and what do you plan on doing? You plan on getting back together? They said, yeah, we want to experiment for a half a year. So the rabbi said, in that case, why don't you get divorced today? They said, Rabbi, what do you mean? You always told us we can make it work. He said, yes, you could make it work if you choose to make it work. If you choose to experiment, if you're going to get back together to see if it will work, sorry. No marriage can last an experiment. Every day within marriage, there are numerous things which will tick you off, which will really, really get you upset at one another. If you're keeping a scorecard, well then no marriage can last when it's an experiment. If you've decided to get together for a half a year of experimentation, every day you'll have a myriad of reasons why this is not working. If you get together and you decide, this is going to work, we're getting together because we're getting together, this is going to work, then it can work. This goes back to our first class, enemy number one of marriage. When a person starts contemplating, is this working? It's not working. From that moment, he's going to see all the points that don't work, because that's what he's looking at. It's our choice what we look at in a marriage. If we choose to look at the positive, that's when we start seeing the beauty of the marriage. And then the beauty just grows. It's a question of what we look at. The most poignant example is that person we discussed a few weeks ago, whose wife gave him that elixir, caused him to die. You remember the story? Yeah? Adam and Eve. The next pasuk, after he is told by God that as a result of the food she gave him, he will die. What's the very next pasuk? Vayikra Adam Shem Ishto Chava. Adam called his wife Chava, ki hi aita im kol chai. She was the mother of all living. He sees the positive in her. He doesn't say she's the mother of all death. He says she's the mother of all living. He could have said she's the mother of all death. That's also true. The issue isn't what's true. Which brings us to another point. People often err. They say, but my complaints are true. She really is annoying. She really is disrespectful to her mother. She really is unfair. She really yells too much. No one's discussing the truth. The truth has many faces to it. The question is, which point will you stress? At any point in time, if you want to take any human being on the planet and start telling me what's wrong with them, you can do that. And when you're married to them, you can do that even more. The question is, what will you look at? What do we choose to focus on? You guys hear of Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach? He lived here in Jerusalem. He was a very big Talmid Chacham. One of his students once accompanied him home, and he saw him at the entrance to his house, setting his tie straight, putting on his jacket. So the student said, "Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't realize there was an important guest waiting for you. Is it okay that I accompany you, or should I leave now?" So Shlomo Zalman looks at him and says, "What do you mean?" The student said, "I saw you fixing your tie, getting your jacket all straight." Shlomo Zalman said, yeah, because when I walk into the house, I'm greeting the Shechina. My wife is there, and my wife is the representation of God to me. So I have to get dressed before I walk in. I have to look nice. Every time we encounter our spouse, we are again encountering the Shechina. Chazal said, Zachu, if a couple purify themselves, Shechina b'nim, then God's presence is between them. When he's coming back home, he's coming back home to the Shechina. There were once a group of people. They tried to get a shul going. It wasn't working. So the five board members go to the rabbi and they say, "You know, we tried to build a shul. It's not working. We tried to get congregants to come. No one's coming. We're thinking of closing up shop." So the rabbi says, "You know, I understand it'll take you a few months before you can close down. I just want to tell you that among the five of you, two are extraordinary people and might still end up being the giants of the Jewish people. There are two among you that might still be the real giants of the Jewish people." The guys go back and they start thinking, "I wonder who the two are. Well, Frank over there, he's really gentle and sweet. Maybe I should treat him nicely. Who knows where he's going to end up one day? And maybe it's George over there. You know, he's always looking out to see how he could help people." Each one started looking at the other and thinking, maybe it's him, and maybe it's him, and maybe it's him, and maybe it's him. So they started seeing the positive in one another and treating one another with respect and kindness. Their exceptional treatment got other people excited about what was going on in that shul. And slowly started growing and growing and growing. And before long, they weren't talking about closing it down, but they had a thriving community growing around it. I once had the good fortune to get off the bus together with a big Talmid Chacham. You guys probably haven't heard of him. His name is Rav Rom. chief rabbi in South Africa, head of the courts there, Rabbi Rom, you heard of him? So we were walking to the same place, and I always try to take advantage of situations like that. So I said to him, can you tell me what's the best tip to helping couples stay together? What's the best thing you can do? So he said to me that when a couple came before him, the first thing he would do, if they tell him they were contemplating divorce or things weren't going well, he'd sit down and think for a minute, and then he'd say, you know, Chaim and Esther, I'm really surprised that you two could be telling me that. Because I always looked at you two as one of the most fantastic couples in our congregation. You two, I mean, you guys have children that are doing well in school, and you're both successful building a home. And he'd start pointing out to them all the positive things they have in their home. And he'd say, I'm really surprised that with all that going on in your lives, you guys can contemplate over whatever else is going on. You guys could contemplate divorce. You know, you have it so much better than so many other couples in the congregation. He told me he'd really point out things to them, and more often than not, over 50% of the couples would leave his office thinking and never come back, continue with their home. It's a question of what you see in your marriage. It's a question of what you see in your spouse. It's not just a question of what's there. It's a question of what you're open to seeing. How much good can we see in the other? Our feelings tend to go like the moon. They have ups and downs. And they're not always reflective of our spouse. People are very quick to think it's a reflection of the other one. Sometimes it's because of all the pressure at work. Sometimes it's because of other pressures. There could be many things causing it. We have to stop and look at ourselves. I once had some kind of pimple or some kind of skin thing on my foot. So I came to the foot doctor and he said, oh, there's nothing. I just scrape it off and you put on this cream and it'll be gone in 3 weeks. I said to him, you know, this little nothing really had me going for a while. I felt I had something on my foot. So I took off my sock. I said, I'll put on another sock. I put on another sock, continued walking, thought, that's funny. Came back home, changed socks again. I kept feeling something on my foot. I looked at the shoe. I changed the sole of the shoe. I saw it's not on the sole of the shoe. I looked at the bottom of the shoe. I'm looking and looking and looking. Finally, I look at my foot and I see, hey, there's something on my foot. I try to take it off. It doesn't come off. Then I said, okay, I got to go to the doctor. He says to me, isn't that something? Isn't that just the way life works? I said, what do you mean? He says, you have something on your foot, and you look at this sock and that sock and the other sock, then you look at the sole, then you look at the bottom of the foot. Only after you look at everything else do you look at your own foot and think maybe it's on your own foot. Shouldn't that be a lesson to you in life? I said, yeah, thank you, you're right. You're right. So I always remember that doctor, Dr. Boldinger. It's a good lesson for life. I think that's the way everyone is. I don't think it's only me, right? I hope. Okay. There's a lot more to say, but I think we've said enough for one day. So we'll sum up what we said today. We begin with a story about a sweet, kind old gentleman. We described how words affect how we feel. We described how the way we view things is largely a reflection of where we are, not only a reflection of where other things are. We discussed the capacity to see good in others. We discussed the Shechina and our own meeting being a representation of the Shechina. And we discussed that sometimes things are in us and not in others. Any questions? Okay.